Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go for another broadcast evening of 3 hours of rocking and rolling and rolling and rocking. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you would like to click on the tab called Chat Room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and then jump into the rollicking, madcap, merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Getting that out of the way. And this here is what we fondly refer to as Thorn in the Side Thursday, yes, and we've got a good representative selection of same, and just the way things are for me these days, when I say thorn in the side, I kind of know what that feels like, and you know what, the reason that cliche exists, thorn in the side, is because you don't ever want one. They hurt. But anyway, it is thorn in the side Thursday. And if you wander into the chat room, you'll be met by Anatole and Hoghead and Jug of Punch and Steve from Georgistan. And somewhere along the way, more and more people will be wandering in. We always have a good little crowd in the room on any given evening, and you're welcome to participate. Yes, do, please. This is a listener-supported broadcast effort. Big Eddie Schultz used to refer to as bake sale radio, you know, back when he was still on the radio. And as far as bake sales go, we try to raise about $200 every evening to help keep things paid for and going and rolling and, you know, there. Packets passing, keep the interweb tubes paid up and alive, telephony, that kind of thing. Lights, food, such as I eat the stuff these days. And so, whether it be one at 200, or two at 100, or four at 50, or eight at 25, or 16 at 1250, or 32 at 6 1/4, or 64 at $3.13, and round up and apply it to the slip rental down at the down where we keep the Horn yacht. Whatever we need to do, however it comes in, we just need to get it to come in, because this is the 30th day of March, 2017. That means there's tonight and one more tomorrow, and we've got to raise $200 each evening in order to lick the Lithuanian. Hi, Marcy. And nudge the Norsky. Hi, Chris. And that's how that works. I would like, if you are up for it, I would like to try to knock out the last $400 this evening, if we could, please. Because the way I was last night, if that happens again, I have received word from the boss lady, Agnes, that screw it, we're going to the ER. And I don't know what I don't know what is to be accomplished by that, but I will do happily as I am told. So if we could actually raise $400 this evening, I'll do all in my power to be here for Friday on the front porch. Don't get me wrong, but it's just out of an abundance of caution because I want to continue to nudge the Norsky and lick the Lithuanian. Okay? Does that make sense? So if you want to help out via PayPal, just head on over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the tab called Contribute, and I can announce we have absolutely no subscribers. None. For the 30th day of the month. Zero. So if you would like to become a subscriber and wind up kicking in something on the order of 15 cents per program as it goes over the year. I mean, you're not buying anything. We're not selling you anything. It's just sort of a way of setting it to forget it. $10 winds up being about 15, 16 cents a program. Well, just click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And then you can just walk away. Okay? And it will be tremendously helpful. We're very, very thin at this end, of any given month for recurring monthly donations. But even if you don't want to do that, just don't tick the box and put in whatever number that you choose, and it all goes toward keeping all of this wonderful on the air. Thank you, Glenn, for getting us started. Thank you very kindly. Much obliged. So we've got $190 to go, and hopefully we'll 190 or 390, depending on how we play it, and we'll see how it all works out. Okie doke. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, well, checks and money orders, because it's just not real safe to send cash. Checks and money orders can be sent to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Okay, thank you, Charlene. Thank you very much. So between Glenn and Charlene, the first $60 are in, and that is tremendously helpful. Now, I mentioned that it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and there was big news on Capitol Hill today. I mean, the kind of stuff that makes everybody who doesn't think that Pooty Poot is just a plush, cuddly, wonderful, sweet little snuggums kind of sit up and take notice. And we will get to that, but I gotta do some catching up, if that's okay. Okay? Particularly something that I wanted to get to yesterday, but we ran out of time. And I'm talking in this regard about something said by Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, who decided to opine about the wall. And I'll tell you right off the top of my head, right off the bat, that when I read this, I kind of I had a historical flashback. Because the fact of the matter is, we have, the United States has a long and shameful history with regard to how we have treated our next-door neighbor to the south. Our next-door neighbor to the south, who, among other things, got rid of slavery long before we did, who had more guts dealing with the predatory practices of Santa Iglesia, Holy Mother Church, than we ever have. And there have been multiple instances. One coming to mind being, you know, it traverses just about the entirety of the history of the Republic from the framing of the Constitution onward. Because with the ratification of the Constitution, or at the time of the ratification of the Constitution, there were people in the United States, usually wealthy, usually landed, quite often slave owners, who thought, you know what would be awesome? If we could conquer Mexico and make it part of the United States and turn it into one great big slave state. I'm not kidding. And so one of the earliest instances of a charge of treason in this country was leveled at Aaron Burr, who was accused of fomenting treason by taking a group of settlers to the Ouachita River lands, which were under dispute. And according to the case that Thomas Jefferson got cooked up against him, Burr, with the intent of invading Mexico and setting himself, Aaron Burr, up as king of Mexico. Which was kind of interesting because Aaron Burr had never really manifested a whole lot of regard for monarchies. There was one pro-monarchy guy among the founders of the Republic. That was Alexander Hamilton. He kind of favored the idea that maybe the brand new country, the United States, would have George Washington as our first king. But be that as it may, Burr was charged with wanting to invade Mexico and become king of Mexico. Mm-hmm. And that's the earliest, those are the earliest years, that's in the first decade of the 19th century. And those dreams of owning Mexico would rise and fall. You know, you wind up, David Crockett spent an entire lifetime on the run from his creditors and eventually ran down Texas way, where he got himself embroiled in that whole Alamo thingy, which I might remind us was a dispute between white Americans, white immigrants into Mexico, who wanted to violate the law of the nation of Mexico and have slaves, which were illegal in Mexico. That's the essential problem. And of course, I'm sure there are Texans out there, had nothing to do with slavery, just like the Civil War didn't have nothing to do with slavery. Yeah, okay. Then James Polk runs for president of the United States on the promise that he will bring Texas into the Union. And up until the arrival of George W. Bush, held the distinction of being the president who had ginned up the most phony of reasons for going to war with another country. And so you get the Mexican War. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago on St. Patrick's Day. It was a dirty war, a filthy war, a bloody war, and only because of overwhelming force did we win it. It was not a great display of American tactical genius. We wound up slaughtering teenagers at Chapultepec, Grasshopper Hill, outside Mexico City, or part of Mexico City. And then, of course, with the dawning of the brand new 20th century, you get Black Jack Pershing illegally invading Mexico to chase down Pancho Villa, whom, we might note, Black Jack Pershing did not catch and was eventually called away to go and fight the Kaiser. After that, along the way, you've got various pieces of racist legislation being passed by the Congress and so forth. Until we find ourselves in 2016 with an orange-skinned misanthrope wandering around the country hollering about wanting to build a big, beautiful wall between us and Mexico. And, of course, he's still quite certain that he's going to build his wall. And remember, he also promised, and we'll make Mexico pay for it. Ha! How about that? Well, they're going forward with plans for the wall. Only the plans are for you to pay for it. Me, us, we, I. We, the people, trying to form that more perfect union. Promote the general welfare and so forth. Enter, as previously noted, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, who, up until he became Interior Secretary, was a member of the House of Representatives with a real hard-on for public lands. Well, he went this week to an event sponsored by the Public Lands Council, where he started doing some high-quality thinking all about the wall. And how to build it and where to build it. Because there are a lot of problems that attend the wall, like running it across private property of people who don't want the wall on their property, or running it across tribal lands that straddle the U.S.-Mexican border. And so somewhere in his musings before the Public Lands Council this week, Ryan Zinke said, the border's complicated as far as... Now, remember, this is the former GOP right-wing, white-wing teabag and POS, okay? So, he's not going to do a lot of cerebral heavy lifting. And he says, the border's complicated as far as building a physical wall, as opposed to what other kind of wall there, Ryan? A metaphysical wall? An imaginary wall? A conjectural wall? Well, it's complicated as far as building a physical wall. The Rio Grande. What side of the river are you going to put the wall? We're not going to put it on our side and cede the river to Mexico. And we're probably not going to put it in the middle of the river. And that's about as far as he went. The implication being that Ryan Zinke, would be okay with what, for all intents and purposes, would amount to yet another American invasion of Mexico in order to appropriate sufficient lands to build the wall on Mexican soil against the will of the Mexican people. You up for that? Because I ain't up for that. Because about the only way to do that is by force. And if you're going to build that much of it on the Mexico side, why not build all of it on the Mexico side? Or, for that matter, why not just invade northern Mexico? Maybe, just maybe, Trump's generals could win that war. Because they seem to be having a devil of a hard time waging ongoing war in the Middle East without slaughtering a whole bunch of women and children and civilian non-combatants. I think it was a New York Times story I saw the other day. It's not often that you see the New York Times use the word scores, as in 47 years ago, meaning a grouping of 20. A score is 20. Thus, 47 years ago is 87 years ago. Right? But the New York Times described the number of people that we the people of the United States, providing for the common defense? They used the word scores to describe the number of people that we have slaughtered in places like Yemen and in Mosul in Iraq and in areas nearby to that. Scores. Groups of 20. A score of innocents slaughtered would be a horrifying nightmare to, well, anybody but Trump. But it is becoming more and more abundantly clear that even the even the modest goals set forth by the Dim Leader administration during the Reign of Error, designed to keep from slaughtering scores of civilians, are out the window. Yemen is about to become, if it has not already, a free fire zone. That means if it moves, the generals have leave to order people to shoot at it, even if the it being shot at happens to be, like, you know, a toddler. And we've been doing that, killing women, children. The evidence is horrifying. People under collapsed houses screaming that they're still alive. And of course, the dead ones not screaming that they're still alive because freedom. And it might be beneficial to recall that on the campaign trail, Donald Trump declared, one, with regard to the Middle East, we're going to bomb the shit out of them. And also declared, we've got to kill their women and children to teach them a lesson that we mean business. This we are now doing. It probably goes without saying, but I will say it just the same, that deliberately targeting women and children, civilians in general, is a war crime.
Yeah, it is.
And we're doing that now. And we also just signed off on a deal to sell some F-16 fighter jets to who? Bahrain? And the nasty business in Yemen is a proxy fight between two opposing sides, and naturally they're religious sides in the region. Yemen, the so-called government of Yemen, is supported by Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and the moderate governments there, while the Houthi rebels, who are practitioners of the Shia flavor of Islam, are supported, of course, by Iran. There are 18 million people in Yemen. International aid agencies estimate that 12 million of them are in need of aid. I don't know how the other 6 million are getting along. Maybe money, who knows? So if that's any indication, building the wall on the Mexican side of the Rio Grande is going to be very, very interesting. And maybe when Mexico tells us again that they're not going to pay for the fucking wall, that's a quote. Well, you know, maybe it'll just be time for Pumpkin Spice Hitler to order a few airstrikes on a few adobe villages. Did you ever expect to live to see the day when the United States would be the bad guys in the Magnificent Seven? 'Cause that's pretty much where we are. You may rest assured, meanwhile, half a globe away, that there's no one crawling out of the rubble of an American airstrike in Yemen saying, my three-year-old little girl's dead, but I guess hers was a fitting sacrifice for pushing back against some rebels who have a different religious belief from me. I'm going to miss baby, but, well, she died for a higher cause. And nothing similar is being said in the environs around Mosul, either. At least my only son was blown into a number of his constituent parts in the name of driving out vicious headloppers. Because those were some very bad headloppers. When we all know that the good head loppers are on our side.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, for folks into animal rights, we talked last night a little bit about how the prairie dog got a win this week. Whipped ass on people for the ethical treatment of property owners. Well, there's always another fight around the corner. Ryan Zinke didn't just talk about appropriating Mexican land and invading Mexico in order to build the big, beautiful wall. He also talked about the practicalities of where the wall has to go generally. I did not realize that we still had in the United States, and I'm glad we do, I didn't realize we still had jaguar habitats. Well, jaguars are, as you can well imagine, endangered species. And Ryan Zinke also announced that the Trump administration will be pursuing a waiver under the Endangered Species Act so that it can build the big, beautiful wall smack dab through endangered species jaguar habitats. Because they are endangered, their habitats are protected against destruction or adverse modification. But that, well, you know. What do we need more? A big, beautiful wall? Or some goddamn cats? Don't we have enough cats? I mean, look at Facebook. There's lots of cats on Facebook. Sometimes they're funny.
Ah! Yeah.
So I felt like we needed to get that out in front of out in front of the program, because I didn't want to just let that blow by. The potential for an invasion of Mexico, attention must be paid, especially, as I note, in light of the long and sordid and sorry and shameful history we have with Mexico. Yeah, what did Porfirio Diaz say? Poor Mexico, so far from God, so near to the United States. Mm-hmm. With a question, jaguar habitats? Steve in New York asks, you mean the garages of rich white people?
No, Steve, not that. Not jaguars. No. Not the wildly overpriced sort of British luxury automobiles. I'm talking about the four-legged kind that can swim and eat people and so forth. The sharp, nasty teeth and big, long, razor-sharp claws.
Jaguars are pretty cars, but Ford kind of ruined Jaguar when it bought a controlling interest back in the day. I don't know what the ownership structure is of Jaguar now. But God, back in the '60s, that one Jaguar two-seater coupe that just looked like a bullet or a needle. It was all front end with the little cabin in the back. Sexy, but no. Yeah, okay, Steve, just for you. Yeah, okay. Little cowbell for the Jaguar reference. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, was that the XKE? Yeah, I'm being told in the chat room, the XKE. Now you're going to make me go look. Yeah, there's the one. Yeah, the hard top. Whew. That is one sexy automobile. Yep, the XKE. Last week I mentioned the story coming out of West Virginia. It's legislature season in many states, and that means, of course, the fetus fetishists are on the prowl. And I mentioned the story out of West Virginia where one Kayla Kessinger, who ostensibly represents WA in the West Virginia legislature, well, when she turns in her What I Did With My Legislative Vacation report, she will happily announce to the faithful, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, fetus fetishists, that she tried to pass a bill in West Virginia that would make it necessary for an underage girl who had been raped by her daddy to get daddy's permission to abort daddy's incestuous rape baby. Because, of course, Christian family values. But, of course, it's not just West Virginia. How about Iowa? You know, The Handmaid's Tale premieres within, I think, a month's time over at Hulu. And that's going to present a problem for me. Because I don't have Hulu. And I'm just about, I got Amazon Prime and I got Netflix both. Adding another one on there, that's a channel too far. But I want to see what they've done with The Handmaid's Tale because having read it, I always thought, well, you know, this is a compelling story, but does it necessarily translate to the screen? Well, we will soon find out. But as we can see from places like West Virginia, and yes, Iowa, there is a dedicated diehard work afoot to turn The Handmaid's Tale into a reality. I think it was in the Texas legislature in the last couple of weeks, and good on them for doing it, that a number of women protesting for pro-choice actually showed up to watch a Texas legislative session dressed in Handmaid's Tale costumes. I saw the photograph, and it was powerful. It was effective. It was also creepy as hell to think that we're that close, but we are. So up in Iowa, representing Shannon Lundgren, who is a repig licking from Peosta. I can only presume that I'm correct pronouncing that correctly. Well, she last week in her subcommittee of three, well, they voted to send her 20-week abortion ban on through the legislative process to a full committee. This bill by Shannon Lundgren is deemed by the hardcores as not being sufficiently brutal enough and not declaring that the precious little fetuses are persons. She noted there are a lot of our caucus who are very supportive of life at conception, period. It's not that I'm not for life at conception either. I campaigned on that. But some of us are willing to take an incremental look at how we can start to save lives immediately. You know, as long as the lives are fetuses and they're only interested in saving them until they're born. And after that, well, little fuckers are on their own. So the Senate bill says that anybody who intentionally terminates a pregnancy at 20 weeks plus is guilty of a Class C felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison. That doesn't just apply to the doctor. That applies to the handmaid. But on top of it all, and here's where it gets really weird. In Iowa, they also want, you know, get a load of this. They also want to declare that an unmarried woman can have her decision to terminate a pregnancy overridden. Did I mention unmarried adult woman can have her her decision to terminate her pregnancy overridden by her mommy and daddy? Now, sweetums, you don't really want to abort the baby, now do you? Daddy says no, baby. Daddy, I am 32 years old. Yes, but you're unmarried, and you're all preggers, and you know you wasn't supposed to get that way outside the bonds of holy matrimony. And Daddy says, no, don't I, Mother? Whatever you say, dear, this is a Christian marriage, and I will submit to you as the church submits to Christ. Does that creep you the hell out? Because it plumb creeps me the hell out. I guess that means that a woman, an unmarried woman who wants an abortion, is going to have to sneak away from Auntie Mommy and Uncle Daddy? It never ends. There's always one of these people who are obsessed with women's insides, who knows that he or she knows far better than the woman carrying the child what should happen to the pregnancy. Well, God gave it to you. Who are you to take it away from God? And maybe it won't pass. Maybe it won't pass. But I wouldn't. I wouldn't take bets on that. 15 minutes before the hour, and I'm getting a question, and from Steve in New York. Anybody else buffering? I'm going to check in with the chat room here and see what the answer to that is. I haven't seen anything yet. I'm not seeing any buffering on this end. But that doesn't mean anything, as we have learned of late. Nope. No one mentioning buffer. Nope. Okay. Sparky, who folded space to become man cave, says no, Bob. So sorry about that, Steve. Well, meanwhile, Marty says I'm getting some occasional buffering. I wish I could control it, but I absolutely cannot. All right. Next up, there's a whole bunch of next up. We move into the present. With what be the, let's hold off for a minute. Because it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and this is another one of those thorns. Oh, okay. Asa pointing out, yeah, there's been the odd bit of buffering for the last couple of days between White Rose. Asa says, I'm thinking it's between White Rose server and TuneIn. Remember, there's always Stitcher, too. You can always check with Stitcher. No, Thorn in the Side Thursday was made for this guy, apparently. And the minute I say this guy's name, Arnold, up in PA, will start swearing and kicking furniture. There's a Republican up in Pennsylvania. I presume that he comes from that part of Pennsylvania that's not Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, but is instead Alabama in the middle. His name is Scott Wagner, and he is a state senator in the legislature in Pennsylvania, and he wants to be governor, and when he gets to governate Pennsylvania, which has already, I might add, been turned into a fracking hellscape. Well, he wants to frack more. Scott Wagner does. In particular, he wants to frack in the state forests of Pennsylvania. Because, well, why not? They've already, maybe it's because they've just about fracked everywhere else Pennsylvania has to frack. And yet, you know, there's oddly enough, everybody isn't celebrating a wonderland of frisbees and wheat checks as all the economic benefits come raining down like the gentle rains of heaven onto the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. But it's not just that Scott Wagner wants to frack the frack out of Pennsylvania state forests. It's the fact that Scott Wagner
doesn't see any reason not to. He leaped right past the toxic effects of fracking, the poisoning of the groundwater, the hell stew of fracking fluid. And went straight to climate change. You know, climate change, the cruel Chinese, the cruel genius Chinese hoax designed to destroy America's manufacturing capacity. So we're told. Well, he said that climate change, and in particular, warming up the planet, heating up the planet, roasting up the planet, doesn't particularly worry him. Why? Well, Scott Wagner acknowledged that he hasn't, he said, I haven't been in a science class in a long time. Probably not since they were explaining to him how the world was flat and if you sail to the edge, you'll just fall right off. Haven't been in a science class in a long time. But the Earth moves closer to the sun every year. You know, the rotation of the Earth. We're moving closer to the sun. We are moving closer to the sun. I guess eventually, I mean, doesn't that mean that eventually, yeah, we'll just crash into the sun. And here, I thought all along that a few more billion years, I can remember when being a kid, I worried about that. Few more billion years, the sun will use up the last of its fuel. It'll explode. It'll go nova. And when it goes nova, pretty much entire solar system will be turned into a cinder. But no, according to Scott Wagner, we're moving closer to the sun. And that's why the planet's getting warmer. But it's not just because we're moving closer to the sun that the planet's getting warmer. There's more to it than that. I know. Brother Deacon Gerald says, at this point, all I can say is, ha? Yeah, this the first time I saw this, it elicited a serious, what, Edith, huh? It's not just the fact that we're moving closer to the sun. It's that we've got more people on the planet. We have more people. You know, humans have warm bodies. So is heat coming off? Things are changing, but I think we are, as a society, doing the best we can. Oh! Now, I remember a few years ago when wingnuts were willing to believe and cited an Onion article in support of it, of the idea. They were willing to believe that wind turbines were going to blow us out of orbit so that we would all freeze to death in the dark of interstellar space. Now, however,
if what Republican Scott Wagner says is true, we might want to build more wind turbines, only point them in a different direction so they'll keep us from getting sucked into the sun. And we've got to do something about how warm we all are. Maybe we can stop wearing coats in winter. I don't know why he didn't get around to cattle. It's not just people that are warm. Doggies and kitties are warm. Oh, over there at Shay, Karen, and Steve, little Cletus and Twiggy are warm. They're very snuggly. Yeah, Pooty Poot is warm. He's all cuddly and snuggly. And that is why the planet is heating up. We're too warm. We need to be able to evolve into frost giants or something. Okay. Well, that didn't take long. Note coming in from Marty. Moving closer to the sun? Damn, the Death Star must be using a really strong tractor beam. FYI, according to the astronomers, the sun is still is too small to go nova. Instead, when it expends the hydrogen fuel and starts using helium, it will expand, and expand until it swallows Mercury, Venus, the Earth, and I do believe Mars. Too bad Stephen Hawking is confined to a wheelchair. But this is, you know, this isn't an outlier. This is mainstream Republican thought as regards climate change. Ron and Raleigh writing in, closer to the sun? I remember a Twilight Zone episode where the Earth was moving toward the sun. Freaked me out. The end of the episode had the Earth moving further away from the sun. Well, not to spoil anything, but something similar is a tad bit of an issue in The Expanse, which Agnes and I are happily watching season 2 of. Mm-hmm. ever the practical man, Robert in Australia simply says, cold baths for everyone! Gerald says, you're not reading this shit from The Onion, are you? No! No! This is real, live, honest-to-Jesus journalism. And Asa, who loves him some science, Asa's found the solution. Why don't we just send a spaceship to the sun at night, of course, and get them astronauts to turn the sun down a notch at night? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Michael in Madison. Has a bumper suggestion, and you know what? I'm gonna take it, because my bumper was just gonna be a cop out. I was gonna go with the Beatles and Here Comes the Sun, but as Michael says, there are certainly a multitude of choices. Nonetheless, I'm going to do something I wouldn't normally do, and offer this particular bunch up as a bumper. And, yeah, I like it. I do. I think there's real potential here. I didn't spoil anything. Marty said, hey, no Expanse spoilers. I'm 3 episodes behind. Whoa,
Well, which season, Marty?
And by the way, I have a feeling things are going to get really interesting here in these final few episodes of the Outsiders season. Of Outsiders, not the, just Outsiders season two. Steve in China writes and says, subject line, modern science. Sort of a variation on that old one about the college freshman. Excuse me, professor, he says. But did you say the sun would burn out in 10 billion years? Yes, says the prof. That's a relief, the student replies. I thought you said 10 million. Sounds a little like young me. Meanwhile, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, says, my solution? A change of address form and move further away. Don't complicate matters. But if a few billion years from now, the sun's going to torch it out all the way out to Mars, might be a good time to start thinking about trying to figure out a way to colonize the Jovian moons and the Saturnine moons. Because that'll be good real estate then, right? Ay-yay. Like I said, this is just mainstream Republican thought. And I have evidence to back up my assertion. Over to the chicken noodle news. Allison Camerota has been talking for a year or more now with six Trumpansies. Just trying to create, I don't know, some sort of timeline of changing attitudes to see if the attitudes will, in fact, change. I don't know how she drew this detail, but I almost feel sorry for her. Get the hockey puck. Really? We're going to do this. All right. No, we won't do it on that channel. We'll do it, damn it, on this channel. Because there's just too much stupid here to let blow past on a thorn in the side Thursday. I mean, this hurts as us. Here we go. Allison Camerota and six Trumpansies. Hockey puck. Go.
So here we are, 60 plus days into his presidency, and we want to get your grades and your impressions of how President Trump is doing. So, Tony Ann, let me start with you. What grade you give President Trump an A already? Based on what?
I feel that he's trying very hard. I feel he's already getting stuff accomplished.
Such as?
Well, I feel that he is trying to, like, loosen up the restraints on business. And I know he's...
You notice that she doesn't say he is doing this or she thinks he's doing this. She feels. She has the feels for Donald Trump. And, of course, big old cross hanging around her neck.
Trying with the health care, but I know that didn't work out as well as we had hoped.
It didn't work out.
Oh, it didn't work out as well as she had hoped with the health care. She was really hoping that a few tens of millions of her fellow Americans could be condemned to a life without being able to go to the doctor, and that a few maybe lesser millions or maybe thousands.
You know, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, would just fucking die. But she's still going to give Trump an A. Definitely an A.
At all. Yeah, well, it's true. But they'll go up again, and then you have to adjust it a little bit.
Okay, Pax, what grade do you give the president?
I give him an A.
Based on what?
The TPP, the Keystone Pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline, the travel restriction, fantastic.
Fantastic. Absolutely. I love it when we can discriminate against the Muslims. And I love it when we can poison the Indians. And TPP. TPP. Because, you know, Donald Trump killed TPP. Which, somewhere down the road, and this is another discussion for another day, we might kind of find ourselves thinking maybe we reacted a little harshly about the TPP. No doubt that there was bad shit in it. But, you know, just maybe. Not for sure, but maybe. Maybe it would have been good to have an alliance pulled together that could respond in concert in the event that something really, really bad happened over there. I mean, just, well, nah. I'm sure I'm wrong. I'm sure I'm wrong. But it was fantastic.
Hold on. Yeah. The travel ban hasn't gone into effect. The travel ban has been shot down by two courts.
He took the initiative. He did it, which is exactly what he said he was going to do. Every single thing that he's done is exactly what he said he was going to do.
But healthcare, some people put in the lost column. The travel ban is not yet in effect. The budget has not gotten a hearty agreement from lots of people. He said he'd get rid of DACA right away. He's not done that for the Dreamers. He said that he would get rid of the Iran nuclear deal on day one. That has not yet happened. The wall hasn't been built yet. He hasn't defeated ISIS in 30 days.
Normally we give presidents 100 days, and I don't think this president even got a weekend.
How long, really?
Yeah, I know, but he said he would do it on day one. And he said he would defeat ISIS in 30 days. That, nobody said, hey, Donnie, you got to defeat ISIS in 30 days. He said he would. Jesus, these people.
Realistically, will you give him to accomplish some of those things?
I think we need to see where we are in 2 years. You know, see where we are midterm.
Okay, Josh, what grade do you give the president?
I give President Trump an A.
Based on what? What accomplishments do you think he can hang his hat on thus far?
Well, you know, I think it's premature to ask that question. I mean, 60-some-odd days into his presidency, he has a four-year term. If you read The Art of the Deal, you see the similar...
Oh, if you read The Art of the Deal. You know, the book he never wrote.
...in the business world, you see similar pressures, opposition, defeat, and he just keeps coming back and coming back.
Sarah Marie, what grade do you give the president?
I give him an A.
Pauly?
I give Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, an A. And to be honest with you, if I had a marker, I would put a plus next to the A.
What do you base that grade
on?
Well,
we see that he's working with Ford Motor Company to build an investment in the United States, as opposed to keeping those jobs or keeping those jobs in Mexico. All right, that's huge.
Billy?
Except for the fact that he didn't have a goddamn thing to do with any of that. Oh, did I point out that all six of these people are white folks? And they're all six of them, okay, five out of six, reasonably well-dressed. They don't look like they were just covered up in economic anxiety. And, of course, at no point in time, because she wants to be able to talk to him again in a few more months, and a few months after that, and 2 years down the road, because she wants to be there, Alison Camerota does, when they all put their little heads in their little hands and go, God damn, I was so wrong. How stupid am I? But that day's never going to come because they don't know how stupid they are. Somehow or another, they just wander around from day to day, getting through life,
dumber than a handful of hammer handles. I don't know if there was a screening process. You know, how many of you have participated in an effort to help a Nigerian widow recover her cash, anything like that? Because I'm guessing all six of these would be right there, because all six of these are clear examples of Fields Commandment number one. You can't cheat an honest man. These people have all paid for their ticket to see the egress. Stephen, New York, I give him an A, but he hasn't done anything. Can I have those standards? No. No, only comrade Kumquat gets those standards, just to be clear. Well, let's fight our way through the rest of this.
I'd give him a B.
What?
I don't give anybody an A.
Business people are negotiators are by nature people that bring opposing parties and different people, different factions together. And that's what he's attempted to do.
But why wasn't he able to close the deal?
Because politicians are dividers.
But isn't Donald Trump the master dealmaker that was going to be able to bridge that divide?
But if you're talking to an empty chair, I mean, what divider? There's nothing that you can pot. There's no bridge across this gulf.
I'm just really surprised at how much opposition he's getting from the right as well. Mm-hmm. I'm very disappointed because I'm very conservative.
Oh, she's
you
very
mean
disappointed.
Again the House Freedom Caucus, the most
yes,
the most conservative?
Yes, absolutely.
You blend.
They should get on board. It's definitely, without a doubt. How has your life changed, or has it changed, in these past 60 plus days since President Trump was elected?
Well, I'm definitely greater again.
There is just this very quiet restoration of law and order and security. We're addressing illegal immigration. We're
painting swastikas on churches. You get the idea.
Going to do deportations. We're not playing this kind of shell game with radical Islamic terrorism.
He almost just said Islam. Did you catch that? He almost forgot to say radical Islamic terrorism. He almost just said Islam, in which case ISIS probably would have come over and just brooga, 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 lopped his head right off because he didn't say radical Islamic terrorism. Did I say that three times, Beetlejuice?
There's somebody in the Oval Office that is
on. But what has he done specifically, tangibly, what has he done in the past 60-plus days to fight ISIS?
Well, I mean, we had the, you know...
We've slaughtered... He said he was going to go over and kill the shit out of their women and children... And we are doing that, because that's how you make America great again. Said we were going to bomb the shit out of them, and we are bombing the shit out of them.
There was an attack that was done in Mosul.
It went terribly awry.
That one was considered bad, but I know that we have somebody who is going to be very aggressive and not let up on this.
It was like people were laughing, literally laughing in his face about the prospect of him being elected. And he got elected. And we don't know how, as far as the votes and fraud and everything else. I mean, my assumption is that he probably would have gotten elected by a higher number than what the results actually showed.
But are you saying that you believe that there were 3 to 5 million illegals who voted?
Oh, I know that in New Hampshire, I've seen it. I've seen busloads of people.
Again, I mean, this is where we keep coming back to. When you say you've seen it, do you mean a dozen or do you mean 3 million? There's a difference.
I saw something I saw. 3 million.
Said there's only 1.5 million people in New Hampshire, so I didn't say 3 million people.
Well, the number that President Trump said was 3 to 5 million illegals.
I don't doubt that.
No, he said in California.
Extrapolating based on what I've seen with my own eyes, lots of people coming in, whether they're illegal meaning they came into the country illegally, or they're illegal voters. They came over from Massachusetts into New Hampshire.
So just to be clear, I care, because just to be clear, you saw with your own eyes busloads and busloads of people coming from somewhere other than New Hampshire to vote. You saw that.
Well, I know Josh has seen it, yeah, and I've seen it too.
Josh, did you see busloads and busloads of people coming in from somewhere
else? I wouldn't characterize it as busloads and busloads.
What have you seen?
But I've seen cars coming in from out of state that are full, from out of, without out-of-state plates. I live right across the street from the polling place in my ward. It's noteworthy to consider when 8 or 10 people get out of 2 or 3 cars.
And you think that people...
8 or 10 people getting out of 2 or 3 cars? My God, that's only 2,999,990 to go. Up to 4,999,990 to go. 8 to 10 people getting out of cars. I mean, goddamn. Let's see. It's a quick ciphering. Let's use the 10. We'll use the biggest number. So 10 divided by 3. 3 goes into 3 times. 3 times 9. 10 is 9. 1/3. That is 3 1/3 persons per car. Clearly, the electoral process in New Hampshire has been deeply subverted. And they were probably just the advance guard. They were just making sure everything was okay for the busloads and busloads.
From Massachusetts are driving across the border to vote in your ward.
I believe that's the case, yeah. And whether it's Massachusetts...
Oh, he's believing again. He's got the feels just like his friend next to him there. How sweet.
Massachusetts or Maine or state, there are people coming across, and it's not fair to wholesale characterize it as voter fraud, because maybe they're borrowing their, I mean, you can...
Maybe they are. Billy, are you sticking with that you've seen busloads or no?
I have seen busloads. I guess I can't cite the busloads that I've seen and where I've seen them and stuff, but I've seen it.
Basically, as far as I'm concerned, if the... I'll say the alt-left, the loons on the left, and
yeah, the loons,
the ultra-right conservatives would stay out of his way, everything would be perfect. Let's face it, he's been taking attacks from both sides from the beginning, okay? I don't know if you've read his book, The Art of the Deal, but I've read it before. He goes into things long-term. He's not a short-term guy. He's willing to stick in the game for 10 years to get things done. Donald Trump, first of all, they are not going to wear him down. He is the master of wearing everybody else down.
Yeah, okay. You betcha there. The best part was the previous guy when he said, because it kind of got lost in the audio from the video. Yeah, I guess I can't cite the busloads that I've seen and where I've seen them, but on television, I've seen it. We let these people vote. Angry wants to know who the f- are these people and what alternative facts universe did they come from? Really, what color is the sky in their damned world? Oh, that's a representative focus group panel of genuine, no kidding, up east, Trumpanzees angry, who are not a damn bit different from all the other Trumpanzees, all of whom got in bed with the Klan and the neo-Nazis to make America great again. And I played that only, like I said, as evidence to support my thesis that when some jackass says that we need to frack the state forests of Pennsylvania because the earth is getting closer to the sun and that's why it's getting warmer, and so fracking the state forests in Pennsylvania won't make a difference. Well, that's, these people are how that person gets elected. Because whether we realize it or not, and I realize that this is elitism, but I'm a hillbilly elitist, so screw it. There are a lot
a really, really, really stupid people in the United States of America. And they vote. Meanwhile, Kitty in Boston, subject line, Trump's first 100 days, says, that line from the woman, we only gave him a weekend. Bitch, even if that were true, he went golfing that weekend instead of doing what he said he'd do on day frickin' one. I probably won't see another golf course once I'm president. Ron and Raleigh, subject line, holy shit. The country is sinking into a yawning abyss of stupidity. I hate to say this, but it's mostly white people. How can these people even feed themselves? Well, see, you don't have to be politically savvy. You just have to show up. Most jobs are not graded upon the degree to which one is politically intelligent. It just you keep your job based upon how much shit you're willing to take, and whether you show up, and whether or not you can put pegs in holes. See how it works? Steve in New York says, I ain't saying nothing unusual. These people live in a world of sound bites and platitudes and don't know the difference. Robert in Australia, meanwhile, says, I get paid every time I say, have you read The Art of the Deal? Brought to you by Carl's Jr. Well, okay, so all those buses and all those cars, James with a good question, why didn't somebody drop a dime? You know, on election day and stuff, every state secretary of state's office, every election commission is open for business. All you got to do is call. Eight to ten people from two to three cars. Michael in Madison says, is that anything like 25 or 6 to 4? Seriously, those. That's nice. Wait a minute. Okay. That's a DJ cowbell. 25 or 6 to 4. No more singing. Seriously, though, these alleged out-of-state license plates, couldn't that just be out-of-state volunteers giving locals a ride to the polls? It could be precisely that. Because that's really legal. And it happens. Especially when you have an effective get-out-the-vote strategy. Oh, yes. So now that I have filibustered almost all the way to the halfway mark of this Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we still haven't gotten to the really big stuff. Hey, let's take a little break. Let's take a little break, regroup, and see what's on your mind. See what you've got to say. See what you think. It is Thursday, which means that we've got an installment of the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. If you want to jump into the conversation, the stress line is 304-663-4676. For folks who want to dial 304-574-8178 or Skype to Skype Bob Kincaid Horn, that line is presently engaged. But we'll see. Things will move merrily along. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Big thanks going out. I mentioned that we have no subscribers on the 30th of the month. Well, I can now happily announce that we have one subscriber on the 30th of the month. Thank you, Clarence. Thank you very kindly.
And thank you to Brenda as well. And thank you to Alma. Thank you again to Charlene. And let me check down here. I'm just adding things up so I can come up with a ciphered up total. Glenn got us started. So that means we are $95 away. We're $95 away from our evening's goal and $295 away from finishing March at our hoped-for funding levels. Okay? It would be great if we could wipe out the whole month because, like I said, I'm not sure if I'll be here tomorrow night. I really want to be, but once you walk into the facility, you're on their clock and not your own. So, $95 to go for the evening, $295 to go to finish March. This is Conversation Radio of the listener-supported variety. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Still, his eyes are ablaze. See the It's Thursday, March 30, 2017.
Our very ability to drink clean air and drink clean water and have a livable future are at risk.
A rising tide of opposition against Trump's latest executive order.
We're in danger of losing that branding of the United States as the renewable energy innovation capital of the planet.
Trump's climate denial puts China first in the global clean energy race. Plus, mobilizing the power of the people with the upcoming March for Science and the March for Climate.
Two different marches?
Yep.
That's a lot of marching.
Yes.
I'm tired already. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The war on coal is over.
Thank God. I thought it would never end.
President Trump didn't issue an executive order. He issued a declaration of war.
Damn it! Another war. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, news out of Texas today that a court there has rejected ExxonMobil's attempt to move the New York Attorney General's investigation into whether they misled investors about the financial impacts of climate change from New York to the presumably more favorable Texas courts. The Texas judge said, nope, this case will stay in New York.
That's pretty good. New York is probably not as friendly a venue for Exxon's position.
Poor ExxonMobil. We will continue to keep our eyes on that investigation from New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. In the meantime, what do you have for us today?
Oh, just the fight over the fate of the planet.
Oh, that's all.
Now we know exactly what is inside Trump's long-awaited executive order that begins the long process of dismantling Obama's climate policy, and it isn't pretty. Without once mentioning the words climate change, President Trump on Tuesday targeted 23 federal climate change rules, regulations, orders, memos, and reports. Despite the administration's rhetoric that it isn't choosing winners and losers, the official text of the executive order explicitly focuses only on promoting the fossil fuel industry and mentions renewable energy only once in passing. Notably, the order does not withdraw the U.S. from the historic United Nations Paris Agreement to reduce global emissions, so that's still in place for now. But negative reaction has been swift. Here's Democratic Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts immediately after Trump's announcement.
This executive order isn't about energy security. It is about climate denial.
Now, there isn't much that minority Senate Democrats can do unless they win more seats in 2018. But because the Clean Air Act and a Supreme Court ruling legally obligate the U.S. to regulate climate pollution, environmental groups are now readying a tidal wave of lawsuits to protect public health. For example, on Wednesday, just hours after Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke formally lifted the Obama administration's moratorium on coal leasing on public lands, EarthJustice.org filed suit to block that move. And state attorneys general are also vowing action. In a statement, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman,
there he is again,
yep, said that he and other state AGs will step in to defend the Obama Clean Power Plan emission standards for power plants if the Justice Department fails to do so, and they say they'll take it all the way to the Supreme Court.
It's going to be a tall order to try to overturn some of these regulations that have been in the works for years and are responsive to laws from decades ago, not just from Obama.
Trump also got pushback from his own supporters for his misleading promises to coal country.
I made them this promise. We will put our miners back to work.
Trump campaign donor and coal mine owner Robert Murray of Murray Energy told The Guardian newspaper this week that Trump, quote, can't bring coal mining jobs back.
What?
Even the utility industry is dropping coal for cheaper, cleaner sources of energy.
What?
Now, climate policy experts say Trump's reversal will hurt the U.S. economy by failing to prepare Americans for the accelerating impacts of climate change, like increased floods, fires, and droughts. They also say that internationally, China is ready to step in to fill the leadership vacuum in international climate action that Trump has now created. Here again, Senator Ed Markey.
If we don't continue to pick up the pace, the Chinese will create the jobs in their country. The Indians will create the jobs in their country. The Germans will create the jobs in their country. And then the rest of the world will import the technologies from their countries rather than right. from our country.
Plus, China has announced plans to invest nearly $400 billion in clean energy technology and research over just the next 4 years. That's to position itself to capture the global market opportunity of selling renewable energy technology to the rest of the world. But grassroots, environmental groups, and scientists are organizing public opposition to defend science. Mark your calendars. The March for Science in the nation's capital and satellite marches around the country is in 3 weeks on Earth Day, Saturday, April 22nd, with a separate climate march the following Saturday on April 29th.
For more on all of these stories and the many that we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
About 24 minutes before the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 30th day of March, 2017. And wow, I hadn't heard Iron Maiden in a very, very long time. I think I actually had a couple of pimples come up just from the flashback. as soon as the program's over, I may have to run out and get some Clearasil. Or maybe some acne statin, as promoted by Debbie Boone. Let's run over Ron in the, I suppose at least a little bit cool and crispy north, is back from the sandbox, and this is the first chance we've had to talk with him. Hey, Ron.
Hi, Bob.
How in the world are you?
I'm doing fine. I've still got snow in the backyard. Things are getting a little bit soggy. I can see my entire driveway and sidewalk, and we've got another 6 to 8 inches of snow coming in over the next 36 hours. It's spring in Canada.
That must be the all-day rain we're going to get here tomorrow.
Probably. We're on the top edge of that same storm. Yeah.
Because I think it starts here about 3 a.m. and just goes all day tomorrow.
Well, you're up high. You don't have to worry about it too much.
Yeah. Oh no. I mean, we don't. Yeah. It'll. We'll just get a little more water in the basement. That's all.
And I apologize if I'm a bit raspy tonight.
No. You're in fine form.
We went through a couple of sandstorms over there, and first one Sue had ever seen. And the visibility in the space of 30 minutes dropped from 10 miles from the hotel room window to half a mile.
I was going to say 2 feet in front of the hotel window?
No.
Is that what we call a haboob?
No. This was gentle. But it's on the order of like 0.01 micron. I mean, this stuff is finer than any flour you've ever run into. Makes confectionery sugar look like boulders. And I breathed that a couple of days and started hacking and wheezing. You know the ones where you swear a toenail's going to come up?
Oh, yeah.
So that's gradually clearing away. But we spent 2 weeks in the sandbox. We put roughly 1,200 miles on a rental vehicle, saw some incredible scenery, and I introduced Sue to parts of the Middle East that she could only imagine, and it was a great trip.
Oh, it sounds like.
I doubt we'll do it again.
And you didn't come back with the camel crud?
No, I did not. I took pictures of camels.
No, but I just happened to remember when you came back, 6 months ago or something?
6 or 9 months ago. Yeah,
you were not a well camper.
No. But that was one where the fever subsided in about a week. But I took about, I guess, 700-800 photos and probably posted at least 100.
Oh, those were amazing.
Yeah. And my all-time favorite was one I took inside the Grand Mosque at night through an archway of the dome of the actual mosque itself, sort of silhouetted in blue in the background. And I've done a little bit of doctoring to that one, and that actually is turning out to be a fairly incredible photograph.
Downright printable?
Yeah, the one I posted on Facebook, you know, you got to downgrade him to where they're not much more than, you know, rough facsimiles of the original photograph. By the way, I can still say facsimile, and I know the meaning of the word. But it was an interesting trip. Tom Wolfe was right. You can never go home again.
You can't go home again.
I've had this image of Muscat, Oman, in my mind for damn near 30 years. Went back to Muscat. Was not the same. It wasn't filled with high rises or anything like that, but it was much more crowded, much more urban. And then I went out into the country on some drives. We took one drive down the coast for about, probably 90 miles through some fishing villages and things like that. And the country itself has gotten, I think they're really concerned about the unrest in Yemen, because there are many, many more military and police vehicles around. And you see them sitting up on hillsides in these dusty brown vehicles that you really have to know what you're looking for to see them. And they're all looking south. And the UAE have one thing coming back across the border into the UAE from Oman. We came up the coast right along the water all the way, finding little tiny roads and villages and all that photogenic stuff. And we hit the border at UAE, and there's a story there as well, which I can tell at another time. But the thing I immediately noticed was there was a probably 12, possibly 15-foot high fence. Looked like chain link, but it was made out of quarter-inch steel. Not your typical chain link that you're going to get through with a pair of bolt cutters. And at least 4 feet or 5 feet of razor wire on top. Went 200 yards out into the ocean, and then went straight up over the mountains, and they were just moving a shit ton of rocks and boulders to build this fence. And I kept asking myself why, and the only reason I can come up with is the UAE looking south. Omanis have always been their good friends. The Sultan is now in his 80s, and he's on his second bout of cancer treatment currently up in Austria. You're not supposed to know that, but he is. And they have appointed a 45-person council to select his successor. And it looks like they've got all the makings of tribal unrest, all kinds of stuff. The seeds are there. And if he kicks off, despite the fact that the citizens universally adore this guy, he's like a god, there's all, you know, the ground is really ripe for all kinds of unrest. Al-Qaeda, ISIS, both sitting just south of the Omani border. And the Saudis are sitting over there, no great friends of the UAE. And so they'll probably be putting their tentacles into the political mix. So it looks like there's a lot of potential unrest. And the UAE's got some extra cash on hand. So why don't we build a fence over the mountains, over 6,000 or 8,000-foot mountains from sea level?
Big, beautiful wall.
Yes, yeah, so through straight rock. I mean, Trump would be proud of this wall. UAE
if they, already built if it. They can do it, why can't we? Why can't we be great like the Omanis, like the UAE?
Yeah. Anyway, I found that a really interesting come-up, and because it wasn't quite what I remembered. But scenery was gorgeous. The people were warm and friendly and generous. We had a wonderful time in the souk. And Sue learned to bargain, which was interesting. There was one bag.
She learned to haggle.
There was one bag that she had her eye on. And it's just your basic cloth bag, like you pick up the recyclable ones you carry into grocery stores so you don't have to use the paper bags or plastic. And it had, you know, a country name on the side. And the two young men in the booth said, oh, that'll be worked out to about $45 Canadian. And she looked at him. She said, are you kidding me? Where do you think I'm from? And she resisted the urge to say, I didn't ride in on a camel. But so she just turned around and walked away.
I didn't just fall off the falafel truck.
So, 100 local currency. And she said, no, kept walking. So what will you offer? What will you offer? And finally, she sent me back after they had yelled up the street, 20? And went back and got it.
Nice. I always go back to that scene from Monty Python's Life of Brian.
But got a bloke here says he doesn't want to haggle. What? Doesn't want to haggle? Oh, no, you're getting it all wrong.
Well, she's a quick study. I'll say that for her. I just followed in her wake and carried the stuff. Not much, all small stuff, but... Oh, I just wanted to say I tried to listen to you while I was over there. It was a little touchy at times in terms of connections. And waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning, a little hard, but I made it. Well, by the way, feel free to jump in and digress here for a moment because I'm going to get rid of some camel dust.
Well, that would be a lovely idea. You're not supposed to breathe that stuff. Carol Baker said, I just love Ron's travel photos, but I'm still disappointed he wouldn't kiss a camel for me. The camels are saying, give a guy one communicable disease and no kisses.
Only takes one.
Well, that's true. And, I check just to see where on earth we're being listened to from every now and then over on the Podbean account. You know, you can get the RSS feed for the podcast over at whiterosesociety.org. And then we have Podbean as sort of a backup, and then there's TuneIn, and there's Stitcher, and we try to be as ubiquitous as possible. But I've seen India. And IFOs can agree on the interesting.
Oh, everybody, Bob.
Well, we've got a listener in Bermuda. Or maybe it's just Agent Fred getting around.
Yeah, maybe. Working on those satellite feeds, yeah.
Yeah.
But I will say that I could not have called in if I wanted to.
Skype shut down, huh?
It's not shut down for text. Shut down for voice, as is WhatsApp, and as is Signal. Those are the only ones I tried.
Because dangerous.
It's encrypted voice and encrypted text you can eventually work out. Encrypted voice, not so much. A lot more resources required.
I guess that they're afraid of what?
They're afraid of anybody using encrypted text and voice, but particularly voice, for short messages. So, sorry.
Well,
camel dust.
I understand. I understand completely. And I guess, I mean, social unrest, they're still afraid of the Arab Spring reaching them, or ISIS cells cropping up inside their countries. I mean, there's any number of reasons for them to, I suppose, yeah, shut that stuff down.
Yeah, they're afraid of ISIS primarily. Al-Qaeda, not so much. But until ISIS came along and demonstrated what a good grasp he had on technology and how to use it in social networks. You know, then they started clamping down. And to a certain extent, I can understand that.
Wonder who taught him to be so good at that stuff.
I don't know.
I mean, we had some interesting hearings in Washington today. It was kind of bizarre to hear the President of the United States described as an active asset of the Russians.
Yeah, think it'll make the pages of the New York Times?
Done did.
Oh, did it?
As did the story of Devin Nunez's leakers. And this that just gets weirder by the minute, Ron. You got these two guys, one of whom used to work for Nunez, and they call him from the White House.
The other one worked for Flynn.
And and formerly with Flynn too. They call him from the White House to come over and view double secret probation secret squirrel materials, which the White House already knows about. He then views it and goes running to the White House to tell the White House about what he's seen that the White House already knows about. And now the White House is saying, all right, everybody wants to see it. Okay, we'll let the Democrats look now, 2 weeks later. The hell is going on here?
Trump thrown up trying to over 2 weeks.
I lost part of that, Ron.
Basically, no.
Oh, here we go again. I don't know why this is happening. This is a new thing with Skype over the last couple of weeks. You get about to the 20-minute mark in a conversation and things start falling apart. Are you still there, Ron? Let's try a different connection. Hold on here. Trying to get Ron back. Okay, are you there, Ron?
I'm there, Bob. Earth calling Bob.
Yeah, that was the damnedest thing.
I tried to call back in three times and could not get in because you were not available.
I was switching connections.
All right. Anyway, I was saying that the last 2 weeks has basically been, they've known all this information, had to know that it was going to come out, and Trump spent the last 2 weeks basically calling squirrel. And the media bit every single time. It's like Pavlov's dog. He pumps something out on Twitter, and they go off chasing the stick.
But today was just bizarre.
I don't think you've seen anything yet, Bob.
Oh no, today was just the beginning.
Yeah.
The big one was put out there on the table by a former FBI agent named Clint Watts, who teaches counterterrorism at West Point.
Credibility, yeah.
I mean, yeah, fairly credible. And he said whether he realizes it or not, Trump
helped Russia interfere with the election. He said, and this is a quote, part of the reason active measures have worked in this election is because the commander-in-chief has used active measures at times against his opponents. And in particular, talked about the number of times that he has cited what we now have come to refer to generically as fake news. Like citing articles from a website called Sputnik. Or referring to the intel community as Nazis. Or saying that the election was rigged. Watts said, I can tell you right now today that gray outlets that are Soviet-pushing accounts tweet at President Trump during high volumes when they know he's online, and they push conspiracy theories.
And he buys them.
And runs with it.
Yep.
But I mean, has that ever been said about a sitting president of the United States, Ron? The president of the United States is an active asset of Russia or any other foreign power?
It might have happened back in the late 1700s, early 1800s, when there was so much interference from Great Britain and France. But there was no media to push it out there, so it died its own natural death.
Well, I mean, I've talked in the past about the James Wilkinson affair. The number one general in the United States military was for years and years and years in the pay of the Spanish crown. And Thomas Jefferson looked the other way even when he was told about it, because he had a bigger hard-on for Aaron Burr. But I mean, it's like saying Abraham Lincoln pushed Jefferson Davis's talking points. This is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And dare we say that if the same information were testified to about Hillary Clinton, oh, Jesus, Hillary Clinton, oh, my God, she wants to start World War III with Russia. Impeachment proceedings would be well underway by now. Any pushback on that?
No.
Beats the hell out of me.
Anyway, even now, Trump keeps dragging up the corpse of Hillary, trying to make points, and he doesn't get any traction, but it doesn't stop him from throwing the words out there.
No, and but he does get traction, Ron. He gets traction with the same people that I was playing the clip of in the first half of the program. The people who think that there were busloads of illegals done went and voted in New Hampshire. And I guess that's all he cares about. Because they got a lot of guns and a lot of stupid. And with that combination, you can accomplish quite a bit.
Agreed. Yeah. But, you know, I wonder, what do you do from a political standpoint to deal with a guy that has an ego the size of three postal zones and is so ignorant about how much he doesn't know that he thinks he knows everything? I mean, what do you, if you're a politician on the Hill, say, you've got two or three terms in the House under your belt. Maybe you're in your second term in the Senate. You look at this guy, and basically all you can do, regardless of whichever party you're from, is to basically either go, A, what the fuck, or B, okay, how can I use this dumb shit to move whatever yardsticks I've got that I want to move? I mean, he's either going to be a tool for people on the Hill or he's going to be a complete distraction that they're going to ignore, so that he has no leadership capability at all for that third leg of the stool, which is one of the critical elements of having three legs on the damn stool. All three should be carrying equal weight.
And touching the floor at the same time.
Right. I mean, this guy has set himself up to basically either destroy the executive branch, hopefully not destroy the Supreme Court, and gets back to a point I made a few days ago that on another forum, that the biggest blessing we've got right now is that we have three parties on the Hill. We've got the Democrats, and then we've got two parties, both calling themselves Republicans, who can't stand each other's guts and wouldn't piss on the other guy if he was on fire. And I'm only hoping that continues, because as long as Congress is at a stalemate, Trump can't do all that much damage except for destroy our foreign policy, perhaps wage war in several places at the same time.
Start World War III.
And kill a few thousand mountaintops in West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee. But he can't do, destroy the earth kind of stuff like he could do if he had a united Republican Party behind him on the Hill.
Right, and now he's gone into open warfare with the Freedom Caucus.
Yay!
And yeah, you kind of sit back and get the popcorn for that one. But that means that under the best of circumstances, Ron, they go out and find Trumpansies to run against the Freedom Caucus, who are even weirder than the teabaggers that the Freedom Caucus already are. And then I guess you have to sit back and say, well, maybe the Democrats...
Sitting on a beach, and I'm going, okay, if I was in a Democrat, or at least appoint the next heir apparent, who is there in the Democratic Party right now that's got enough charisma, clout, and intelligence to presumably run in place of the anointed Clinton? And, there weren't an awful lot of names rolling off my lips.
No, and I think, frankly, I think that's just as well, because whoever it's going to be needs to not have a target painted on their back for a couple more years.
True. Yeah, we saw they gunned for Hillary for 8 years, and they finally got her. Yeah.
8, 25.
Well, they had Bill in their sights.
And she was, and she didn't help herself. But, you want to talk about this Russian stuff, it's impossible to talk about the Russian stuff without occasionally asking the question, how much did Jill Stein get paid?
Oh, I think you're chasing a red herring there, Bob.
The thing is, what we know now out of today is that there was no specific laser beam focus of their activities. They tried to split Republicans. They tried to split Democrats.
And did.
There have been some folks from Bernie's effort who have said, we just got hammered with bots, with anti-Hillary stuff. The Clinton death count, Clinton body count, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But
And the same thing happened over on the Republican side.
Except it was a tad less ferocious, I think.
But well, yeah,
testimony came out today that Rubio in particular had been targeted.
Yeah.
And I just wonder what they thought they were going to accomplish besides general disruption. makes you wonder whether they had any particular favorite candidate in mind.
Well, their purpose,
as opposed to just generally sowing disruption.
Well, right, it's now, sowing disruption, but the purpose, Ron, was to destroy the credibility of the electoral institution, which was kind of teetering anyway, what with the video game voting machines and whatnot.
And gerrymandering.
Yeah. So in some ways, all they had to do was take some of these issues and shine a brighter light on them.
Okay, but let me look at the other side of that coin. They cop the goddamn car. What are they going to do with it now? I'm convinced.
Well, look at Rexxon Tillerson.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot, Bob. I hadn't heard that. Perhaps you've said it 400 times, but it didn't sink through the.
Here's a guy who received the Order of Friendship with Mother Russia directly from Cuddly Pooty Poot in relation to a deal that he struck that would mean gajillions of dollars to Rexxon's personal stock portfolio and more gajillions of dollars to Exxon, and all we got to do is get the sanctions lifted.
So where's that sit right now, sanctions? I haven't heard anybody talking about that.
Not a lot of noise about it right now.
No. Follow the money.
And yeah. I'm sure they hope there won't be a lot of noise about it, so that when they just quietly go away, nobody will notice. We'll be busy with some other outrage.
Squirrel. Yeah.
Well, it's all squirrels. We're under attack by squirrels.
No, you got to do the whole thing, Bob. Squirrel and moose.
Oh, moose and squirrel. Yeah. I mean, I saw a quiet little news article earlier today saying the Trump regime now says that regime change in Syria is not a stated American policy goal.
Oh, since when? As of today, I guess.
I don't have the article in front of me.
What about in Korea? North Korea in particular. We got a regime change going on in South Korea already, but what about North Korea? That's the one that worries me.
Well, North Korea, China, who Marcus Aurelius keeps needling.
I'm far more concerned about North Korea than, with the possible exception of Syria, than anything that's happening in the Middle East or Africa. I mean, you got a guy who's batshit crazy. The Chinese can barely contain him. He's shown a remarkable knack for acquiring or inventing technologies that he should not have by any stretch of the imagination. I know the Chinese are worried about him. I know the Russians are worried about him, except right now he's a convenient irritant for the U.S. The South Koreans are absolutely terrified of this fat little crazy fucker, as McCain called him. By the way, that was funny as hell to watch that whole exchange go forth. And North Korea threatens dire consequences against people using such inflammatory statements. And McCain comes back with a tweet, "So I should have called him a thin little crazy fucker." Anyway.
Yeah. He's a maverick, that John McCain.
Yeah, these are the things that I picked up on the fringes working to skip from the Middle East. Which, by the way, when you listen to Al Jazeera English and the BBC, and even occasionally France when they deigned to put up an English broadcast, the news is remarkably more balanced than it is anywhere in North America.
It's a very different world.
It is. I mean, shit happens out there in the rest of the world. And they talk about it. They talk about stuff going on.
Well, that's because our broadcast news media has obsessive compulsive disorder and can only cover one story at a time, and they all have to cover the same story.
Yeah. I mean, I saw news coming from Papua New Guinea, from New Zealand. How long has it been since you saw a story from New Zealand that didn't involve a goddamned earthquake or a story about Lord of the Rings?
I think I saw that story last week.
Eh. So I'm sitting over there, sitting up in bed with a couple of really comfortable pillows behind me. But we've had that discussion.
Right. The ones you didn't steal because they were $165 a piece.
Yeah. And I'm working to skip. I've got my channels figured out in each country or city I'm in. And I'm bouncing back and forth between BBC and Al Jazeera English and going, this is what news should be like. They were everywhere. They were covering stories from all over the world. You know, give it a minute, whatever. And you go to Al Jazeera, you get a whole bunch of one-minute segments with a whole bunch of other stories.
Well, see, we've got one outlet in the United States, Ron, that does something even faintly similar to that in National Petroleum Radio.
Yeah.
And of course, what's the response? Bunch of goddamn liberals!
Yeah.
Because there's a significant plurality in this country that, to the extent that they pay attention to the product known as the news, look to it for bias confirmation and not actual information.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about North Korea. I read a fascinating article 4 or 5 days ago. Didn't bother to save it. About what would happen if they did decide to, you know, launch a nuke. And there were really no satisfactory answers.
I'm pretty sure none of the outcomes would be positive.
The author seemed to be pretty confident that if they do try to fuel one up to go, we'll see it happening.
Yeah,
but then because of the dynamics that you just mentioned, China, Russia, South Korea, yeah. Japan, there's the question of, you know, how folks would feel about us going all in and getting all Bush doctrine on top of a launch, you know, preemptive strike. And then, of course, there would be the usual suspects who would say, no, it wasn't really going to be a launch. This is just more of the warmongering deep state. Because Hillary...
But that's the kind of story that generates a lot of speculative response. But in terms of technology, the part that scares me is that for those liquid-fueled long-range rockets that North Korea's got, it takes some time to fuel them up. And it's observable. You can see it. They have made remarkable advances in solid fuel rockets that can be deployed in a matter of minutes. Roll them out of a tunnel, lift the suckers up, and fire them. And there's nothing that could be done. They're not that far away from having that technology at their fingertips. That takes in South Korea and Japan. They won't reach to the U.S.
Yet.
If they launch one of those suckers... We've got treaties. What do? We defend South Korea. We defend Japan to the death. What do with Trump in power?
And one of the things that the article said is that, you know, Japan's self-defense forces have a navy, and it is replete with quite a few Aegis cruisers. yep. that are designed to shoot down missiles. And you hope that between that and our own, that, you know, you can shoot a bullet with a bullet.
Yep. You hope.
Which is not particularly encouraging.
But like I said earlier, I don't see a positive outcome. And, you know, you can talk until the cows come home about the multi-generational politics and meddling that have created the quagmire in the Middle East. You can talk about the global dynamics of Russia versus China versus the U.S. That, too, goes on for decades. And then you've got North Korea. I mean, it's a pimple on the face of all the other basic strategies that have been employed, geopolitical strategy. Nothing works. They find ways around everything. They are consumed. I don't want to say it's a maniacal aspect. I think the average North Korean citizen just wants to get it. I would like to think they just want to survive.
Eat more than three times a week?
Yeah, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, it's in dramatic effect in that country in terms of it gets primal in a hurry. But, I mean, nothing that you can identify as a tactic other than obliteration works on these folks. What are you going to do with that much power concentrated in one batshit crazy individual who's determined to pass everything on to either his son or his daughter? No, no. So that's the one that worries me, because I don't see an obvious way out there. Sanctions aren't working. They just keep developing technology. They're belligerent. They're going to use it.
But they tread a very, very fine line, and they know exactly where that line is. Because the one, you know, they can make noises at us and Japan and South Korea all day long.
They don't do it to China.
But they do not do it to China, and as long as they don't cross that line with China, then China will, you know, manage them.
How's that working out?
You know,
I'm convinced China's got as much nervousness about North Korea. It's like...
it just depends on which way they point the missile now, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it also... It's like owning a Rottweiler that somebody else trained. You're not quite entirely 100% sure that Rottweiler is going to do exactly what you tell him to do. They're not entirely predictable. And I don't know. It's just an old man and a frozen Canadian North grousing about things that he can't impact, but they worry me, and so.
Well, that's because
you, Bob,
out of
and I feel so much better
out of little situations like that, Ron. You know, one little exchange. It's not a leap of imagination to see a whole "there goes the neighborhood" scenario unfolding from it.
Oh, are we going to talk domino theory?
Well, I don't know that it's domino theory. I call it "there goes the neighborhood" theory. They nuke South Korea. They nuke Japan.
Yep.
We retaliate in kind because we've got a retaliate in kind of president. And he's let slip the dogs of war. The stories that come out of the Middle East indicate that he's just given the generals their head to do whatever they want to and fuck a bunch of civilians. And if you've got that kind of an attitude out there, they nuke somebody, we nuke them. Well, that wasn't hardly fair. We have a bunch. So somebody nukes us. So we nuke somebody else. It won't take long.
Well, it's going to be a bitch living in the Midwest when that happens, because that's where all the goddamn silos are.
Yeah.
You listening, Carol?
It's going to be a bitch living lots of places. It's, yeah. Hey, I got, here it is. It's going to be a bitch living.
Well, Bob, I'm going to...
If that wasn't so freaking grim, I'd give myself a cowbell.
I'm going to have to sign off. I've got a couple of things to get done. I've got still got 2 or 3 hours of jet lag to make up. So I'm probably going to be hitting the rack before too long. But in any event, nice talking to you again.
Oh, always nice talking to you. We have lovely conversations, and I appreciate them.
We do go over the map, though.
Well, that's what we're supposed to do. That's what happens with conversation radio. That's how it works.
You take care, sir. Nice talking to you again.
All right. Take care, Ron.
Okay. You say hi to folks for me.
I'll say hi to all the folks.
Okay. All you all.
All y'all. Bye now. Hey to mama. And, that was the inimitable, the irrepressible Ron in the far frozen north. Look, I made it all the way through a program last night. I'm not much better shape than I was last night now. And if y'all don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and knock off a little bit early. That way I can get the uploads done, hopefully by 9, and get my happy ass into bed and find some position to lay in that doesn't make me want to cry. And with any luck at all, I'll be here for Friday on the front porch. As it stands, we've got $95 to go for fundraising for this evening, $200 to go for tomorrow. I really badly want to nudge the Norsky and lick the Lithuanian. Because it means a bunch. So if you want to help out, please feel free. And hopefully we will talk tomorrow evening, assuming that, Agnes forces me to go to the hospital, and B, that I get back home in time and with a clear enough mind. Who am I kidding? It's not like they're going to do anything about the pain. You know, because hillbillies. But I'll try to be here at 6 p.m. for Friday on the front porch. If I'm not, I will post both on Twitter and on Facebook. I know there's a lot of people who hate both of them, but that is my best way to... That's the best way I can reach the largest number of people. And if I'm sitting on a hospital bed or something at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening, I'm not going to be able to respond to emails. So you might think about firing up Twitter, and maybe Twitter's a little more innocuous than Facebook. I don't know. And just follow me, at Bob Kincaid, or Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to everybody who jumped in and knocked down half of our fundraising goal for the evening. Thank you to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this conversation. It's your engagement in what we've been doing here for over 12 years is absolutely amazing to me. It's not about what I've done. It's about what you've done. Okay? So, that's it for this evening. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.